At some point, the world is going to go into a crisis, or a country is going to go into a crisis. It might be the UK, it might be Italy, might even be the United States, but something is going to happen. Things are very, very taut in the financial world at the moment. When that happens, I think they will close the banks. You'll wake up on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning and say and hear the news that they've shut the banks, not going to open on Monday. And then by Monday evening or Tuesday, you'll get the announcement that we're having a new currency, the CBDC, and don't worry, it'll be 1-to-1 against the old currency. But there'll be some restrictions on your ability to convert your old money into the new money.
November 24th, 2022, Monaco 64, home of alternative economics and contrarian views. So today I have the pleasure of speaking with Clive Thompson. He's a retired wealth manager for one of the biggest private banks in Switzerland. He's based out of Switzerland, but I think, of course, he's originally from the UK. And he's written some interesting articles on LinkedIn, and he follows me on LinkedIn. And he's written about the Federal Reserve, its balance sheet, the fact that they're making huge losses now. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about CBDCs as well, and gold and silver, because Clive is a stacker. So Clive, welcome to the channel.
Thank you very much. Shall we start with the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve? If we step back to about 2011, the Federal Reserve had assets of around $2 trillion and capital reserves of about $40 billion. So back then, the leverage on the balance sheet was about 50 times, which is quite leveraged. Right now, they've got over $8.5 trillion of assets on the balance sheet, and their capital is still about $35 billion. So they're leveraged over 200 times. In any financial institution, that is a situation which can go seriously wrong. And where I think we've got to is it is, in fact, going wrong. We've got two big problems at the moment on the balance sheet. The first one is their assets were purchased over the last decade when interest rates were very, very low. So their mortgage-backed securities and treasury bills and treasury bonds, probably yielding something of the order of 2.5%. That's a guess, I don't know. But at the same time, the liability side of the balance sheet is the deposits from banks and depository institutions on which they'll be now paying about 4%. So what's happened is first of all, they're mismatched in their maturity. They have long assets with a long maturity and a low interest rate, and they have short liabilities with a high interest rate. That's a loss-making combination. And in fact, the Federal Reserve is reporting on its balance sheet as we speak that it's making losses for the first time in its history. So that has the propensity to go wrong, because if they keep making losses, sooner or later on the income and expenses side, they're going to run out of capital. Already their reserves have been depleted, and they're in—they're showing, actually, if I look at the balance sheet, they're showing a negative reserve of $9 billion, and that is only going to get bigger as they make losses going forwards, unless they lower the interest rates. The other issue that the Federal Reserve has got is this portfolio of bonds that it bought over the last decade. We all know that bond prices have fallen a lot. I'm going to say at least 15%. So on the $8 trillion of assets, you can see that even a 10% fall in those assets would be $800 billion compared with their share capital of $35 billion. It will have, on paper at least, have wiped out that share capital. Technically, that means that the Federal Reserve is insolvent. You know, insolvent is not bankrupt, and it's only paper losses, and they can get that back over time. But where we've got to today is a situation where the Federal Reserve must be talking to the Treasury about how they're going to recapitalize the central bank. You can't carry on forever with no capital and no reserves. And if I was Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, I would have some concerns if I'm making deposits into an insolvent bank. So I think that's where we are at the moment. I mean, from a simple layman's point of view, it's as if you have an income of $100 and you have a mortgage going out of the door of $200. You're making a loss and you can't continue until you're forever, because sooner or later your capital runs out. Now, the central bank's got another problem, and that is its policy, its avowed policy of quantitative tightening. Quantitative tightening means they want to reduce the size of their balance sheet. There's two ways to do that. One is the simple runoff by allowing government bonds to mature and taking in the cash. And the other way is a little bit more faster, by selling bonds. To the extent they sell bonds, they're going to be crystallizing those losses, and they won't be paper losses anymore. They'll be real, realized losses. So it's a very, very difficult situation for the central bank to deal with. And what they really need, what they seriously need now, is more capital. And the Treasury would be the obvious candidate for the capital, because the only beneficiary of the Federal Reserve has always been the Treasury. What happens in practice is that the Treasury receives all of the Federal Reserve's profit, but is not receiving anything at all now, because they've stopped making a profit, they're making a loss. So now it's only just a question of time before something happens. I think the Federal Reserve will be asked to put in capital, and I don't know how the American taxpayer is going to see that, because the Federal Reserve doesn't actually have the money to put it in.
Yeah, and on your article here at the end, you put a transcript of Ben Bernanke, the winner of the Nobel Prize for Economics this year, and it's weird to say that. And he was testifying in Congress in 2011 here, and one of the congressmen, Chairman Conrad, asked about this, and he said here, the reason I asked a question and phrased it like this, because in common parlance, there has been a great concern that what the Federal Reserve did was going to result in large losses to taxpayer, or there was the potential for that. You do not see that. And he answered, I do not see that as likely. So it looks like the rubber is meeting the road right now with these losses, and Bernanke will be proven wrong again. He was wrong about the subprime mortgage crisis not impacting the general economy, that famous comment he made in 2007. And don't know if you saw here, I shared as well this article about the Bank of England, how the Bank of England is already taking in taxpayer money for the first time, which I think is quite outrageous. Have you seen that one? £11 billion pounds.
And I read something similar about the Australian National Bank now making losses. So I think it's a common feature of central banks generally that they're making losses, and those losses have to be funded by the taxpayer. There is nobody else who's going to put the money in.
No, and I think the reason this is happening is because most of these central bankers in Wall Street and the city, they thought that interest rates are going to stay low forever at zero or even negative. And no one saw the consequence of higher rates, of rates going up as quickly as they are. And maybe you could explain to the viewers why that is exacerbating these losses.
So what's happened is the central bank has to pay to its investors, that's the depository institutions, in other words, banks, it has to pay the market rate. And it recently put up the rates three or four times by 0.75% from below 2% to now we're at 4% on the Fed funds rate. So the depository institutions are receiving a rate of about 4% on their deposits. That's the that's on the liability side of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. On the other side of the balance sheet, they've got their assets, which are the bonds and the treasury bills and the mortgage-backed securities, which will be paying a lower rate than they're paying out to the banks. I think just something to say about the mortgage-backed securities, that's where the whole world went wrong back in 2008. The Federal Reserve still has several billion dollars of MBSs on its balance sheet. I'm just having a look here.
Yeah, I've got it here from your articles. I think it's 2.7, isn't it?
That's something like that, yes.
2.7 trillion. There you go.
So that type of security goes down in value rapidly because it's linked to mortgages, it's long dated, and when rates rise, people default on their mortgages. Now, in this case, it may not seem like a big problem for default because these securities are guaranteed by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, which are now, to all intents and purposes, government-owned institutions, or let's say government-controlled institutions. But you know, it is a problem because we mustn't forget that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac both went bust back in 2008, and if it wasn't for the government diving in and saving them, investors would not have got their money back. So the net result is now we've got the Federal Reserve owning a lot of these mortgage-backed securities, and the government, to all intents and purposes, is through the back door guaranteeing them by the guarantee of the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But it's a leveraged situation which has the propensity to go wrong.
Yeah, and I think the Chinese had a lot of mortgage-backed securities in 08, and it was one of the reasons why they had to bail them out. I don't think the Chinese would have been happy. I mean, one of the solutions, but that would make the Fed lose all, well, it doesn't have much credibility for me, but for the public, if they were to basically not publish these numbers anymore and people couldn't see where the Fed was, do you think that's possible? I mean, that would be very banana republic-like.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. You may remember way, way back, must be 20 or 30 years ago, the Federal Reserve used to publish the M3 number, and we all sat on the edge of our desks on Thursday afternoon waiting for Paul Volcker to announce the M3 number, because whatever the M3 number was determined whatever was going to happen for the rest of the week in the financial markets. And the Federal Reserve, in their wisdom, suddenly decided that we didn't need to know that number, and they stopped publishing it. So we don't know that number. We have some shadow numbers produced by other firms now, but we, you know, it could well be that they decide to stop publishing information that they think we don't need to know.
Yeah, and going to gold and silver a little bit now, because if these losses continue on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, and I think they will, because I think the bond bull market we had from 1981 is over. And I'm not saying the bonds are going to collapse overnight, but I think we're going to see at least a decade of higher lows and higher highs in yield. So the Fed's balance sheet is going to continue to suffer. I guess, as you said, central banks, they can just keep running. They're above, well, they are the law, so to speak. They're protected by the government. Will that make investors like realize that and say, well, the whatever they issued there, you know, the currency we use is supposed to be backed by the Fed's balance sheet. If this balance sheet is like trash, why should we hold that currency? Is that when you see gold and silver really doing well?
Well, exactly. We must remember that the old adage of if they can't pay, they won't pay. And that seriously is the situation with the Federal Reserve. But I think there's a wider problem in the bond market itself. Just about every investor on the planet who's a serious investor will hold bond funds, probably managed by a professional manager somewhere. And they'll be looking at their bond funds and saying, look, I've had this for 10 years. It's worth less than I paid for it. What's going on? And the investment manager will say to them, yeah, but if you look at it, it's got a yield to maturity of this and da, da, da. And the guy will say, look, I don't care. You told me that when I bought it. And look where we are now. You know, I'm down 10, 20, 30% on my bond fund after X years. What's the point of holding it? So I think over the next few years, we're going to see a drift out of bond funds by everybody who ever had one. They're going to say, this just isn't working for me. It's not doing what's written on the tin. It's not bringing the stability to my portfolio. And they're going to come out of bond funds and look for other things. And I think gold and silver will be one of those things that people start to put in their portfolios as a substitute for the bond funds. Now, I'm not saying we're definitely going to have a rush for the exit in the bond market. But, you know, there's a lot of people sitting very, very close to the exit. And we might see a surge of sellers, and that will drive down bond prices. Because if you sell your bond fund, it doesn't matter how good the yield is, the bond fund manager has no choice but to sell the underlying into a market which doesn't want to buy it.
Yeah, and the modern philosophy, and you know this because that's what you used to do, wealth management, maybe you can tell the viewers, is a balance of 60-40. Is that isn't that and the 40% is usually bonds or in 60% equity. And I just brought up here the TLT. I know it's just a fund, but it's based on the 20-year plus Treasury bond ETF, and it's actually down 28.5% year to date. So just to that's how and I think gold in pounds, of course, is up on the year. In dollars, it's just about down about 3%. So I know silver is down, but not as much as this fund.
Well, that just shows how, the 28% loss just shows how much money the Federal Reserve might be losing on its bond book. Of course, its bonds won't be 20-year bonds. It'll be a range of maturities from short all the way through to long. So that's why I kind of use the figure of maybe 15%. But even at 10%, it's seriously in serious deep water. Now, the Federal Reserve is not audited. They do publish their annual report and accounts, but they're not audited. But I think any auditor would be having kittens when they saw this.
So the 60-40, could you touch up on that? Could that do you see that changing going forward?
Well,
Maybe it's going to be, 40, maybe it's going to be 30, 30, 30, and the 30, the new 30 will be gold and silver.
the principle asset management is never to have all the assets in one basket, and my view is you should have as many baskets as you can find, and then allocate different percentages to each basket. But that does mean everybody will have bonds, and given the relatively lackluster performance of gold and silver over the last decade, very few people have large exposures to gold and silver. I would say, optimistically speaking, the most aggressive investors have 3 to 5% exposure to silver. Obviously, there'll be some outliers with much more, but the typical investor has less than 3%. I think that figure is going to go up a lot as people look for an alternative to the bond market, because after all, silver is money, always has been, and gold is money, always has been. And it's just for the last 50, 60 years that it's been technically replaced by the dollar, at least until 1971, and then by nothing at all.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about CBDCs. I see that they're pushing it a lot. There's a lot of news that the Fed, New York Fed, recently tested it. The Bank of England is working on it. How do you see CBDCs? And I personally don't. I just think it's a replacement, a technological replacement for a system that's dying, the fiat currency systems, but maybe you've got a different opinion on it.
I think it's quite likely that the CBDC will arrive, and it will also be the subject of the currency reset at the same time. At some point, the world is going to go into a crisis, or a country is going to go into a crisis. It might be the UK, it might be Italy, might even be the United States, but something is going to happen. Things are very, very taut in the financial world at the moment. When that happens, I think they will close the banks. You'll wake up on a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday morning and say and hear the news that they've shut the banks, they're not going to open on Monday. And then by Monday evening or Tuesday, you'll get the announcement that we're having a new currency, the CBDC. And don't worry, it'll be 1 to 1 against the old currency. But there'll be some restrictions on your ability to convert your old money into the new money. So if you're poor and you have a small bank account, it'll be converted 1 to 1 straight away. And you'll probably even find that you get a free gift from the government to get kickstart the system. Maybe £3,000 or £5,000 will be given to every citizen gratuitously to kickstart the system in the new CBDC. But if you have 100,000 or 1 million in the bank, you're going to be told, yes, it's 1 to 1, but you're going to have to wait to convert it to the new currency. Now, wait means never. We all know that. But they won't tell you that. They'll say it's a temporary suspension because we're in the middle of a crisis. The people are rioting in the streets. And we need to calm the system. So here's some free money, everybody. Go and enjoy yourselves. And by the way, the rich can't convert their money for a while, but they'll be able to do so later. So if you happen to own Apple bonds, they'll be denominated in the old dollars. You won't be able to, it'd still be old dollars. You won't be able to convert those old dollars until you've got the cash. But when you get the cash, you'll need permission to do it. And you're not going to get that permission. It'll be exactly like we had in Britain back before 1975, when we had the exchange controls. You needed permission from the Bank of England. I mean, I remember when I traveled abroad the first time, I was allowed to take £50 with me abroad. Didn't go very far.
No, and go ahead.
So I think I think the CBDC will arise as a consequence of a crisis. And when that happens, there will be a limitation on how much of your old currency you can convert at one-to-one with the new one, even though technically it'll be one-to-one, so you've lost nothing. But the advantage of this, from the government's point of view, is it's to all intents and purposes wiping the slate clean, because all of their liabilities will be denominated in a currency that nobody can use, nobody can spend. So if the crisis is generated by people rushing to try and convert their money into something, into anything, firewood or whatever they're trying to do, they won't be able to use their old currency the poor man will be able to use it. But anybody with any wealth, like the government of China, will be stuck. So the government will be able to print away its old liabilities without any worries at all, because nobody will be able to spend it and it won't be able to affect the economy. The only thing which can affect the economy is the new CBDC, which will be at least initially touted as very sound money, at least until they start borrowing in the new currency. But then they've got a fairly long lease of life, because they'll be starting from a debt to GDP ratio of effectively zero, because they won't need to count the old debt. Of course they will from an accounting point of view, but it won't be affecting the economy anymore.
So this reminds me of Argentina, I think, in the early 2000s. A lot of wealthier depositors had U.S. dollars, and then it was one-to-one to the Argentinian currency, and then everything collapsed, and they closed the banks, and those people who had dollars were now given Argentinian government bonds, and they were also, it was called the corralito, and because a corral, you know, the money was kept in a pen and you couldn't use it, and people were given the government bonds. They couldn't take over a certain amount of their money out every day. So basically you're telling me that the CBDC will won't change anything for people who don't have much, but for the people who have a bit of savings, even not just in cash in the bank, but even like stocks and bonds, those funds are going to be frozen under this CBDC.
There's no reason for the stock market to, the stock market might shut down for a week while the banks are closed, but there's no reason, if you own shares in a blue chip company, there's no reason why you won't continue to own them. And likewise, if you own a government bond, you'll continue to own the government bond. The difference is the company will still be worth something. The government bond, you won't be able to do anything with it. If you sell it, you're going to get some old currency that you can't and not allowed to convert to the new one. So to all intents and purposes, the old bond will be worthless. And I think when they bring this rule in, when they bring in the CBDC, in the middle of a crisis and freeze your old currency, you'll still be able to trade your old currency, but you'll be trading it effectively through the back door, and you'll be lucky to get 70 cents on the dollar on day one, and 3 months later, 20 cents on the dollar, and a year later, nothing.
Yeah, but even with, let's say you have some shares of IBM that are worth $100,000, if you liquidate that, you won't be able to take that $100,000 in new CBDC and spend it, because you're going to have a limit. How is that?
Well, we don't know how it's going to play out, but I'd like to think that if you own a house or equities or gold and you sell it, you'll be able to sell it for CBDCs. I think the problem that the government will be facing is when we panic about the currency and we want to own anything but the old currency. And I don't think they have a particular problem if you're selling something to have more of the new currency, because that makes the new currency strong. What they'll be trying to avoid is a complete collapse of the old currency by people getting rid of the dollar or the pound or the euro or whatever's falling in price.
One thing I'd like to ask you, because I get this question a lot of times from the viewers, is what will happen to their mortgages, credit card debts, and so on when there is a reset and the old currency is destroyed, so to speak?
I think this would be great for the man in the street who has a mortgage, because his mortgage will be denominated in a currency that nobody can spend, and therefore it will be worth a lot less. So servicing his mortgage, he'll be able to buy the old currency at a few cents on the dollar, and he'll have a lot more money in his pocket to spend on other things. So in that respect, it'll be great for the economy, because the man in the street will have less outgoings. His mortgage will be effectively over a short period of time wiped out to nothing. So will his old credit card debt. And the same thing can apply to corporations. Almost all large corporations have got large borrowings, which in a currency reset will continue to be denominated in the old currency. And over time, they'll be writing down the value of those liabilities and booking a profit as they write it down as a foreign exchange profit. So it'll be very good for companies who'll be writing down their debt. It'll be very good for the government, who will no longer see their national debt as a problem for the economy. It'll be very good for the man in the street who'll have a mortgage which is now denominated in a currency which doesn't exist, and his credit card is wiped out, so he'll be able to start spending again. The government won't need to take money out of your pay packet to service a national debt which it doesn't care about anymore. So I think actually, once we pass the reset, it'll be very good for the global economy, and we could see an economic boom, the likes of which we saw back in the 1950s when America was pumping money into the whole world.
And some people might say, what if they turn your old debt into the new CB, they like make an exchange and you have your mortgage in CBDC? You don't think they'll do that? That would defeat the purpose of things going.
Well, that would be, because that would mean that the asset holder has CBDCs, which he can spend. And we mustn't forget that the crisis will be arising because people are panicking about the currency. They're trying to get rid of the old currency. If you convert all the old currency, and therefore all the old bonds and all liabilities and assets, into the new currency, you're just converting old pounds for new pounds, and it's the same thing. So, no, I think the whole idea of CBDC is to...
Yeah, sorry, you're not solving the problem then, yeah? Sorry.
No. So I believe that monetary assets, fiat-denominated assets, will, to a large extent, remain in the old currency and not be converted. But they don't want a riot on their hands, so of course they're going to convert everything that the small guy owns, and the small guy will be okay, but the government's going to decide who wins and who loses, and I guess it's not going to be the wealthy, and I guess it's not going to be the foreign governments, and I guess it's not going to be the foreigners.
And do you worry about the fact that they're talking about programming CBDCs? I mean, that's the tyrannical part of it.
I think if they do this, it's inevitably going to be programmable, whether we like it or not. All I can say is I'm very happy to live here in Switzerland, because nothing can happen in Switzerland without a referendum. I mean, we literally vote on pointless things like dog poo or what day you can hang your washing out. We also vote on very important things like taxes and foreigners and employment laws. But there's no way a CBDC could come into Switzerland without a referendum. And I can guarantee the Swiss population would vote against it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And you showed me, and before we started, you have a silver coin, which is quite interesting. And maybe you could give us your opinion. I know it's difficult to forecast when this could happen. So it says 5 minutes to midnight. Yeah.
I think this is from the island of Tokelau, which I think is somewhere near New Zealand. It's a $5 coin. It's made of solid silver. It's worth about $20 for the silver, but I paid maybe $40 or $50 for it. I think 5 minutes to midnight is very telling, because I think that's where the world's financial system is. It's as near as it can possibly be to the end of the current state, and it's time for a reset. All the big institutions like the World Bank and the IMF are talking about debt forgiveness. Well, debt forgiveness, it's basically means don't pay, or debt restructuring, don't pay. So I think that's where we are. And I think 2024, 2023 will be years where this is quite likely to happen. I don't know which year, but I think it's very, very close.
Yeah.
So my advice,
go ahead. Your advice.
I was going to say my advice is, from the wealth management point of view, stay diversified, but minimize your exposure to bonds, minimize your exposure to fiat, and increase your exposure to other things. And obviously gold and silver would feature in those other things. And I'm not going to say a figure or percentage of what's right for each individual. But I think there's one important thing I'd like to add, because at some point people are going to say I'm wrong. And the reason they're going to say I'm wrong is when we get to this currency reset, we mustn't forget that half the wealth on the planet will not be deployable. We're talking about the cash deposits, the bonds. It'll be worthless. When that happens, people will be forced to rebalance their portfolios. They'll be selling assets to buy to get the new CBDC. That does mean that in the new currency, the price of everything will be lower than it is today.
I see. And no, I agree with you. Being out of anything that's denominated like a bond, government bond, and cash in the bank, that's the worst thing to have in a reset. I remember in Brazil, I lived in Brazil, and in the late 80s, they had a reset. And my uncle, he bought a property, and luckily he exchanged the contract on a certain date, so he paid the owner. And then the next day they did a reset, and the guy who sold the property, he was basically wiped out. And my uncle luckily had the property. So what else? Go ahead.
Just on Brazil, I'm not sure it's Brazil or Argentina. Didn't they have this situation back in the 1980s when the government decided that every bank deposit had to be loaned to the government apart from $1,200? I'm not sure if that was Brazil or Argentina.
Yeah, it surprised me.
But if you were wealthy, if you had more than $1,200, they helped themselves to it and said it's a loan to the government at a very low rate of interest, 2%, when the inflation rate was in the hundreds. By the time people got it back a few years later, it was worthless.
Yeah. So just to finish off, I just wanted to ask you, because you were in the business for a long time, did you, let's say 20 years ago, did you ever think we're going to be in this situation? Or when did you wake up to the fact that this was possible, what we're experiencing now?
I've been preaching for several decades, I would say, that it's not the price of goods which are going up, it's the value of money which is going down. Obviously, things have accelerated a lot in the last few years, and we're in a much more serious situation than inflation. Inflation is not the big problem at the moment. The big problem is the potential waking up one morning and finding that your money's worthless. Perhaps I just go back and tell a little story. If I recollect that I must have been about 5 years old, and I was at my grandfather's house, and he put in front of me a bar of chocolate and a £1 note. Now, back then, a bar of chocolate was worth sixpence, and a pound note was worth 40 sixpences. So there were 240 pennies in a pound back then, before they decided there was only 100 of them. Anyway, so I took the bar of chocolate, and my grandfather and all his friends laughed at me because I should have taken the pound note. Now, I don't think you can buy a bar of chocolate for a pound, but back then you could have bought 40 bars of chocolate. A few years later, when I'd wised up a bit about money, I may have been 10, he put in front of me the bar of chocolate, the pound note, and a gold sovereign. And I took the pound note, being a wise kid, and I could buy more chocolate. Now, It was quite strange because he laughed. None of his he, my father my grandfather worked for HMRC, so he knew a thing or two about money and taxes and investments. But I don't think any of his friends knew what a gold sovereign was. And I don't know what it was worth back then. Perhaps it was worth £3 or something. So then I remember my father giving everybody a long lecture about I guess it was about Gresham's law, explaining the sound money drives out the bad money drives out the sound money, which gets pocketed away. Anyway, it seemed like none of his friends actually got it, and I certainly didn't get it at the age of 10. But when I was maybe 15 years old or 14 years old before he died, he gave me this gold sovereign, and I went along. When I started work in 1975, I went along to Sharpe's Pixley in London to ask them how much it was worth. And I don't remember the exact price, but I seem to recollect them saying, "We'll give you £10 for it, or you can buy another one for £25, or something like that." And I didn't like the deal they were offering. But I think that today a sovereign is probably worth several hundred pounds. But I still have that gold sovereign that my grandfather gave me. It's not worth any more or any less than it was in 1962. It won't buy me more bars of chocolate or less bars of chocolate than it did then. But the money has gone down in value. So it's the money which has gone down. And that's what we have to remember over the last, ever since money was created, it's been going down. It's not like that the UK government was the first government to decide to debase the currency. Every kingdom ever existed debased the currency at some point.
Yeah, that's the thing. Whenever there's a new currency created, and even possible CBDC, the trend will be down, because that's what happens. Governments always debase the currency. I think the ounce of gold in the 60s in the UK was around 12 pounds. So I guess the sovereign, like you said, was just over 3 pounds, because it's just less than a quarter of an ounce. So Clive, it was really great speaking with you. And feel free to contact me, or maybe I'll contact you again to have another chat.
Thank you very much, Mario. I'm a great fan of your shows, and good luck.
Thank you.